Welcome to Advertising Week Europe 2024 in audio, powered by The Barbershop. In this podcast, we'll bring you the latest insights and trends from industry leaders in advertising and marketing. Join us as we dive into discussions that shape the future of our industry.
Hello. Hi, Mads.
Hi, Shelby.
Hi, everyone. Good afternoon, and thank you for being here. My name is Shelby Shankman, and I am a creators agent at UTA. And although my accent may suggest otherwise, I am based in our London office, where I've been working a lot with international talent and podcasters, digital creators. And I'm very excited to be joined by one of those today, the fantastic Madeline Argy, who checks all of those boxes and many, many more. Madeline, who just at 23 years old, has risen to fame for her brutally honest life stories and conversational anecdotes. Since posting her first TikTok in 2021, Madeline has gained 7 million followers across her platforms. Since then, she has also signed to Alex Cooper's Unwell podcast network and launched her podcast Pretty Lonesome, and has done some really incredible brand deals. So on that note, Madeline, tell us more about yourself and specifically your career trajectory up until this point.
Okay, well, I started in 2021, which we just figured out.
We didn't know the date.
And it was really just a boredom thing that I started like posting. And then it kind of just spiraled into its own part of my life. And luckily I finished university like 6 months after I'd started posting. So it kind of enabled me to do it, I guess, as more of like a job than just a little hobby. And then about 9 months after I started is when I met Shelby at UTA and had a team behind me. And now we're here.
And this is tell them the one fun fact about what you studied in university, though.
Oh, linguistic?
Yes.
Yeah. Because people always say I don't use my degree, but it's like I learned to talk really good. And I used it. So.
And Madeline, as a creator, right, you can really focus on any subject. You choose to center a lot of your videos and your content and your podcasts around loneliness, and wanted to dig in a little bit more on that and why you choose to do that.
I think it was just like natural. I think it was like a genuine theme of my life was that I'm always just alone, but I'm not necessarily lonely. I just love my own company. I love being alone. And especially the time that I started posting, I was at university. So that was like a very just like solitude dissertation writing time. So like as I developed the project of my podcast, it just seemed like the natural thing to focus on, because I think a lot of other people in this generation are also in the same position. My age group is mostly at university or just freshly graduated, and it is like a lonely time, but I don't think anyone really prepares you for your 20s being as lonely as they are. So I feel like it's nice to have a place that we can all like recognize it in
common. And on that note too, like, why do you choose humor and lightheartedness in your videos rather than going more of an inspirational, motivational, you know, TED Talk type route that you could go?
I don't think I have like the qualifications to be motivational or try and be. I always say I don't have any advice to give. It's very much just like come and we'll just like kind of suffer together or have the same questions together. I don't really have any answers. So it would feel a little bit weird if I was trying to do the motivational thing. And it's just not, it's nice to look on the bright side, I think. I don't know.
And do you think that that's why, you know, we get a lot of feedback all the time that you're very relatable, right, to your audience? And do you think it stems from what you just said about not trying to give the TED Talk and rather just focusing, you know, on what you're experiencing and feeling and kind of making it more relatable?
Yeah, I hope so. I'm not sure. I hope so.
And then, how do you think you know, you're entering the brand space more and more across the podcasts. You're doing high-end brands. You're doing, you know, brands that you think, you know, your audience will relate to. How do you think that brands and consumers can work together to build, you know, more real relationships kind of over time, you know, with your audience, with whoever it might be?
I think it's important for brands to think about who they're working with and why. Mm-hmm. And I think, especially like with a Gen Z audience watching a creator, they're very in tune to like the second someone's speaking off a script or they're not meaning anything that they're saying, or it's a product they really wouldn't use. I think they know that immediately. And I think in my experience, even if I see something that I know is an advert, but it's from a creator that I know would enjoy the product, I'm still going to watch the advert and I'm still going to enjoy the content because it sounds like their normal content. It's the same video they'd usually post. They're getting paid for it, but I'm happy for them. And so I think it's like who you work with really matters. And it's more than just like, do they fit the physical image or do they fit, you know, like the moral image? It's like, would it look like a regular piece of their content? And then also allowing them to have that creative control so that it doesn't sound like an ad, but really working with someone that you can give that creative control to, but it still fits the brand image. That's why I think it's important that it's like...
And like in your eyes, right? Like what makes a perfect collaboration, you know, with a brand? Like what do you think checks all the boxes? And you don't have to know, you know, it doesn't have to be perfect, but yeah, what...
I think it's just when it feels like really authentic, or at least as authentic as it can whilst we're still aware that it's an advert. Like when it really fits that creator's niche. And it's like a lot of the time if I'm scrolling and I immediately see something as an advert, I'm going to scroll immediately past it. But if it's a content creator that has already put out that kind of content and they're just integrating a paid product into that, I'm so much happier to watch it. And then I'm still going to get a couple of minutes of their regular content as well. I think that's really valuable because otherwise, you know, the brand spends money for people to just immediately scroll because they immediately think, I'm not in the mood to be advertised to. I'm on my break from work, you know? It's valuable time.
And then, so most of your brand, right, and content and kind of the segues off of everything you were just saying are based on you being extremely authentic with your audience, right? And what you put out to the world is like truly you, and trust me, it's truly her, more than it just being, you know, your glistening exterior or whatever it might be. So I guess through, you know, social media and kind of through the 7 million followers that you've gained, right? How do you continuously remain authentic to yourself? And how do you, you know, keep that up throughout everything? What do you think it is?
I think it's easier than you would imagine. Like it's
why is
not...
that? Yeah. Mm? No, why is that? Why is it easier?
It's just, I think, I don't know. It just is. I think it's like to let something, any part of your life literally have a massive impact on who you are as a person is kind of crazy. But I think for me, I've always kept the same friends and I've made new ones along the way, like in the industry and throughout events that I've come to, but I still have the same core friends, my family. And it's like if they kind of start to think, like, what are you doing? What are you saying? Why are you acting like this? Then that's how I know, like, we have a problem, because that should never be the case. So it's, you know, just making sure that you still have the same core life mm-hmm. is, I think, that's the most important thing.
And are you ever, like, do you ever think about how there are 7 million people following you, you know, on social media? Or is it, again, you're thinking more about, you know, your friends, your family, the core people in your life when you're putting out content?
I don't think I think about the amount of people that follow me. It's more like, would I want my mom and dad to
right.
to see this piece of content? Or like, I know my little cousins follow me and the youngest one is 10. So I'm always thinking about them because they see everything I post. And that's like my biggest concern. So, yeah.
And when companies, you know, are approaching you for brand deals, which is happening frequently, what, and we kind of touched on this, but like, what is probably the most important thing to you, right, in selecting these partnerships each time?
I really, as Shelby knows, I'm very picky about the brands that I will work with. And for me, it's like, if I don't think that the brand or the company is beneficial, I will not work with them. So it's really like, if I would have it on my conscience that I promoted this thing, then I won't do it. It's also like, if I genuinely use the product and want to be seen using the product, then that's great. I'll work with the brand. But there are definitely brands out there who I don't agree with, whether it's what they do behind the scenes, whether it's the entire message that they're putting out. So I'll always keep that in mind when choosing who to work with. But really, it's like, if I enjoy the product and I use the product, I think.
And how do you like, you know, incorporating the product? Like, do you like it being organic? You know, what are your, I don't know, like your favorite types of ways to incorporate everything?
Yeah, I really like when it's organic. I think it's really hard because everyone is going to know it's an advert. And I think there's like a level of respect that you have with your audience of, we both know that this is an advert, but I also want to convey to you that I genuinely use this and I genuinely like it. That's why I chose to take the partnership among other ones that I rejected.
Well, and I think that's what's so unique about you, you know, in this space is like, you genuinely know that if you're endorsing it, right, it's something that you would want to use, just given how selective you are and the partnerships that you are doing, yeah. Which is incredible.
I hope that's what it is. Yeah.
And then, so we're sitting here, right, with a room full of people in the advertising space and marketers. And what would you like to share with them in terms of best practices, you know, when partnering with individuals like yourself?
I think it's kind of what I said a little bit earlier about, like, how closely do the people that you're hiring actually identify with, like, what you're trying to put out, and how much does their regular content look like what you're going to ask them to post? Like, how similar are those two things? And I think it's also, it's like, yeah, it's what I said. Like, if it looks natural and feels organic and you know that the person who's promoting your product is genuinely going to use it and it looks good on them, that's the best thing that you can do, I think.
And like, in terms of, you know, you went from recording in your car. So just so everyone knows, Madeline started recording YouTube videos in her car. She then, you know, transferred it into a podcast. Like, you're very, again, selective, right, in terms of the different lanes and the different things that you're doing. Would you say, you know, over the next couple of months to a year, like, is there anything that you're excited about or areas that you want to focus on, whether it be in the brand space, the podcast space, or are you happy kind of continuing, you know, what's going on right now and letting it flow?
I mean, I am excited for it just to continue the way it is. I'm pretty happy with what we've built so far, but I just want to grow those projects. But I don't know. I have some ideas for the podcast that are top secret right now.
Oh, but really?
But I'm pretty excited for where it can go and just to have this like fun project to like kind of do what I want with and grow on this side is really exciting.
And I think the other part I wanted to touch on with that, like what's so interesting, you know, with you as a creator and why I've loved working with you kind of being in London and focusing again more on international creators is you tend to, you know, go into all these different markets. You have your US audience, you have your UK audience. And what's incredible over that is being able to work right with brands that kind of dip into both or one or the other and getting to experience all these different kinds of things. And I think like that kind of just lends itself to you as a creator and the business that you're building and just being able to be in LA, New York, here, and kind of wherever else.
Yeah. So I hope
very,
so.
Very exciting.
Thank
you. Very exciting. And on that note, so we weren't going to do questions, but we have time for some. So we don't have the cue cards lined up, but if anyone wants to say any, you might have to shout a bit. But yeah. Yes. I can repeat it too.
Around it. Hello. Hello.
There we go.
Loneliness is a Gen Z phenomenon, and we see a lot of research about it. Why do you think that is, and how do you think social media is combating that, you know, general population issue?
Ooh. I mean, I don't know why. I think it's just, I don't think COVID helped in terms of loneliness. Like, the whole work from home situation is not good for this generation. I don't know what's going to come of it or what people are going to do in reaction to it, like, long term. But
do you think it really affected you too, and that's why you went to social media a bit?
I think so. I think, I mean, I was completely alone during lockdown. I was one of the people that stayed at university when everybody else went home. So I was, like, pretty much alone in this house whilst all my friends, most of my friends were international students, so they went back to their home countries, and I was just completely by myself for a very long time. And I think that's definitely what started it. And I feel like a lot of people haven't really recovered from either that phase of their life, or that phase of their life is continuing from, like, work from home and all these things where it's just harder to meet people. And if you didn't have those first couple of years of university as well, I think that's when most people tend to make their friendships. So if you were in lockdown in year one and year two, like, I could imagine that it's much harder. I don't know if social media is doing a lot to combat it directly. I think it's more of, like, a band-aid, and people can get, like, a comfort and feel like people also understand them. And it's like a community that you find online. But I don't think it's ever going to be, like, a replacement for the real thing. But I do think it's nice and it's comforting to have these, like, communities online. I find a lot of comfort in my favorite creators. But I think people are using it more as, like, a replacement, because there's literally less of the real thing nowadays. That's just my opinion. I could be wrong.
Just following up on that, that you do a lot on social media and in podcasts, in terms of meeting people in real life, what's the difference between meeting your fans and your followers and friends as well at live events versus having that virtual digital wall between you and them?
Oof. I think I'm in a unique position where there's not much of a difference, because I do, like, overshare a lot online. And I think it puts people in this position to feel like they can do the same to me, which they can. And I know I've been asked a lot of times if it makes me uncomfortable, and every time my answer is no, like, it really doesn't. I get people come up to me and they'll
Didn't you meet one of your best friends on the street who came up to you? Yeah.
Because she was crying. And I love it, because I get, it's like an immediate connection that you have with someone, and you just kind of skip, like, a year of small talk and jump into the real thing. So I don't know if there's really much of a difference for me in terms of meeting people online versus in real life, but that's probably a slightly unique experience.
Thank you.
Hi there. How do you deal with the negativity on social? What's your sort of combat to that?
I think I tend to limit my time online. And I think a lot of the time, especially if I'm scrolling, I'll notice that I've experienced, like, 50 emotions in 5 minutes, because every video has been on a completely different subject. And so I've got back into movies lately, like, really old-fashioned, because I've realized that's so much more peaceful for your body, and, like, your nervous system is just on, like, one slow kind of, like, rise and incline of emotions that it's going to make you feel. I feel like I'm relatively lucky in terms of negativity online. I don't feel like I see a lot of it directed towards me in a super malicious way. There's always going to be things that are horrible to see and read about yourself, and there's always going to be people that don't like you and that will make that known. But I do think I'm relatively lucky, and where there is that community, I tend not to look. Like, I know where I shouldn't look online. I don't go on Reddit.
Definitely not Reddit.
We don't go on Reddit. And it's just, like, you know, you can kind of figure out what apps you're received well on, what apps you're not received well on. And you can choose to limit your intake of messages that you get and not checking your requests and just communicate with people that you know. And it's, you really do have to be like conscious of what you consume, because there's just so much negativity online. And I think we're frying our brains slowly by experiencing so many emotions in like such a short period of time that it's good to be conscious about it. But I think that's all you can do is be conscious, because we're all still going to do it. But yeah, right?
Hi, I love your TikTok content. What's a brand deal that you've loved working on, and what made it so good?
Ooh, I'm going to say the Kosas brand deal was definitely one of my favorites so far. I think it was good because I got to meet the team before we even started putting together content, so I've really understood what the brand was about and how it came to be, and it's a pretty cool story, actually. And they were really, like, very helpful in terms of figuring out exactly what the content was going to look like and how it was going to fit. And they were very open creatively, which I really appreciated, because I think it worked well for me.
They let you add insight, right, into what you wanted to do.
A lot. And, it was just overall a good experience. And I love the brand. So,
and use the product.
Yeah.
I just wanted to ask, do you think social media is having a negative effect in terms of loneliness or isolation?
I'm not sure. I think, like, it's so tricky. I don't know. But I think that everyone individually can reject a certain thing if it gets to a point where it has to be rejected. So it's like, the internet's not good or bad. It's like what we do with it. A phone's like not good or evil. It's just an object. It's what we do with it. So it's like, I think if anyone is genuinely using the internet to a point where they're so lonely and it's always available for them to get off of it and go outside, I don't think the internet itself is like feeding into the loneliness epidemic, but I think like it's such an escape. But I think the issue is elsewhere, honestly.
It's what you were saying, right? It's a band-aid, right? It maybe will solve the problem in the moment, but not necessarily the overall problem of loneliness.
Yeah. I think like there's definitely people that get like sucked into it. But I feel like that's like people who game a lot online, they get really like sucked in. But I think everyone who just kind of uses social media gets bored. Like I think everyone in the room, like you've been scrolling for like an hour, you do get antsy. Like it's not fun after a while and you do kind of want to get up and move. So I don't know that it's actually the internet that causes the issue.
They're coming.
So you're now doing a podcast, and you started on YouTube, I think. I just want to ask you, like, what's your favorite? Because I think YouTube, you're actually, you know, showing something, like, and in a podcast, you're just talking. What do you prefer?
Ooh, I really enjoy them both. I think it fully depends on the day. Like, I love vlogs because I know I'm going to enjoy looking back on them one day more than I'll probably enjoy looking back on my podcast. And it's, like, so much fun. Kind of feels like you're scrapbooking a little bit, like, making this video diary of your life. And I love it. And I love putting them out. I think I'm kind of more excited to see people's response to them because they also feel much less, like, self-indulgent than my podcast. But I do also love the podcast because it's fun. Like, it's fun to just sit there and like yap for 2 hours. They usually are 2 hours long. I cut them down, but they're very long. And I think it's fun to like build a project. But I like them both for different reasons, honestly. But yeah, I do like that vlogs are less self-indulgent. I will say that because I think my podcast is very like me, me, me. I'm just talking about myself most of the time.
But and I mean, I think what's amazing, right, about especially YouTube, podcasting, TikTok, whatever it might be, is Madeline speaking to her fans and they're able to consume the content kind of in whatever way that they want to. So whether it is listening to the podcast, whether it is watching your vlogs, YouTube, right? So kind of giving that array of content to consume is the power behind all of it. So. Mm-hmm. One more.
Hi, Maddie. Just on the podcast, I wondered if you how you want to develop it further, if there's any key topics that you want to discuss for your Gen Z audience, or maybe any guests. Is there a Adweek exclusive that you can share with us?
No, but I do want to, they're top secret, but I do have some specific ideas and ways that when you have like a segment, but that's not the word. Anyways, it's like I have ideas of how I want to evolve it in the next year or so that I'm very excited for. I would like to do guests, but I think I just need to develop my interviewer skills before I get there. We did a guest. That may see the light of day sometime soon. Hopefully. That was pretty cool. That was a good learning experience, but it made me very aware, okay, I have a lot to learn when it comes to interviewing people. But yeah, I think I'm pretty happy with it the way it is in terms of it's kind of me alone, because I think that's the whole concept of the podcast was like being alone. But I would like to have guests on that I can have intellectual conversations with and like just kind of share information, especially around some of the topics that I've already covered, because I think a lot of the time I'm asking questions and I'm not giving answers. So it would be nice to have guests on that can supply some answers for people who have told me that they relate to the topics that I've already spoken about. So that's kind of what I would like to do.
Great. I think we have one more, maybe?
Yeah. Hi. As talent and as an individual, when a brand comes to you for a partnership or a potential partnership, what kind of elements are you looking for from them? What makes that attractive to you as a person in the space you're in?
I think it's definitely a lot to do with how open they are on their creative. And of course, like whether or not it's a brand or product that I actually can see myself using. And it's also kind of interesting to see how they want to lay out like a posting schedule. I always find that interesting because I think there's a lot more, I think, benefit in a longer term deal than kind of churning out a bunch of posts that may irritate your viewers and they don't really want to see it. And it's like you can build this image of identifying with this product and this product becomes something so close to you that's sort of associated with you when the partnership is like a longer term partnership. So I really like when that's kind of put on the table. I think those are definitely the partnerships that I favor, just to really, you know, make sure that it looks like I'm not just promoting a bunch of things that I don't care about and kind of just, it feels not disrespectful to my audience, but I love them and I want to make sure that they know that I care about what I'm promoting to them and not just trying to, you know, make money and get offline. So I always like the longer term, more thought out partnerships.
Thank you. Well, thank you, everyone.
Thanks, guys.
Thanks for joining.
Thank you for listening to this episode of Advertising Week Europe 2024 in audio. Stay connected with us on social media using the handle @AdvertisingWeek and visit our website, europe.advertisingweek.com, for more exclusive content. This podcast was produced by Podcander, the audio conference solution.